when we approach a homemade diet for a pet, it's a little bit more like making baby formula, you know, than it is making like a dinner recipe for ourselves. And so the level of perfection I want in that recipe is high. Most of our pets with homemade diets probably eat way more balanced and well than most of us do. Because from my perspective, this pet might eat this every day forever, you know, so even just being a little bit off on a number or having things not exactly how I want them can add up over time. So that can be a little surprising for owners who might be used to more variety or more flexibility in a diet, just that level of precision.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Blending passion for customer success with love for pet nutrition, Trow Nutrition. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rengen Pet Nutrition, we partner with a purpose.
Hello, and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Jan Sokodolski, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in the pet food science industry. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. And today my guests are really honored to have Dr. Emily Luzana. She's a veterinarian and a board-certified clinical nutritionist. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So Emily is currently, you are currently in a kind of private practice, correct? Clinical nutrition service.
Yes. My work partner, Dr. Bullen, and I are both nutritionists and have a private practice nutrition focused service. So we work directly with clients, but also other hospitals and universities and do some industry consulting as well.
Great. And so today's topic, broad topic, is going to be about homemade diets. So what are the challenges? What are the logistics that pet owners need to kind of be aware when they do homemade diets? Before that, Emily, I always like to let our guests introduce themselves because we have a wide audience. So it'd be nice to see where did you start? Where was your vet school? And how over time did you actually choose to become a nutritionist and how your career path evolved over time?
Yeah, I'll start before vet school. I went to NC State for undergrad and did a degree in biology with a focus in nutrition. So I've always just been really interested in nutrition. And then I went straight through, went to vet school, NC State as well. And then I went into general practice for about 7 years before getting kind of the itch. I just didn't feel done. So I went back to NC State and did an alternative track nutrition residency, which a little plug for the alternative track, you know, it's a great way to continue kind of working and getting practical experience and doing kind of your residency at the same time.
So maybe very briefly, what is the alternative track? How does it work? How long does it take and how many weeks? How does the separation between you have to be on training versus you can be in your own practice? How does it work?
Yeah, you can set that up and kind of tailor it to your needs, depending on your schedule and your mentor's schedule. And there are not many veterinary specialties that have this track. So, you know, if you're listening and you're interested or, you know, you have an ability to do that within your field, I'd really encourage it because I think it's a great way just to have different perspectives, you know, within the different fields. So for most of us who have done an alternative track, it might take an extra year or two, depending on your work schedule. I think many of us have started thinking we'll do like 50-50 and, you know, just kind of do it on the side. And then you just get really obsessed and end up finishing it ahead of schedule.
So let me, I'm curious. So you were in private practice for like 7 years, you said. And so what ultimately make you think that nutrition is the way to go for you?
I think of nutrition as like the gateway science. You know, it's kind of science at its most basic. I mean, not that that means it's simple, but it's just this basic understanding. You know, what do we eat to keep us alive? You know, what do we not eat to, you know, avoid being unalive? And then hopefully being able to take that to the next level and say, you know, what can we do with nutrition to help us thrive, you know, not just survive. So I've always just been fascinated by nutrition for humans, for animals, and certainly being able to apply that to my patients. So it feels like home.
Great. So in your current practice, what kind of work is more or less encompassing? Is it healthy animals, diseased animals? Can you tell us a little bit what kind of, how is a clinical nutrition practice, you know, entail?
Yeah, well, no 2 days are the same, probably for you as well. We do work with both healthy and ill patients. So sometimes, you know, for example, anything from a growing large breed puppy that might have some special nutritional concerns or just be perfectly healthy. And perhaps the owner wants to, you know, home cook or do a non-traditional diet, or they just want to have really in-depth conversations about nutrition. And then, of course, we work with ill patients as well, sometimes more chronic illnesses like GI or renal disease, and sometimes critical care like feeding tubes or parental nutrition.
And you also do work with companies or consulting for industry?
Yes, we do some industry consulting as well, which I find fascinating. I like seeing kind of the whole spectrum. And I think very highly of our industry partners. I mean, most people who kind of seek our advice are trying to do the best for their pets and best for their clients. So it's really, it's been interesting to see kind of all aspects, even from, you know, feeding your pet from the kitchen to the bowl, all the way, you know, to the food factories.
Before we come into the homemade diets, what do you see since you are in nutrition, you know, from an undergrad until now, what is your perspective of what changed, maybe even from the owner's perspective? What do you think are the big changes of the last years?
I was just thinking about this, you know, and not just in nutrition, but in so many industries, the rate of change is just unprecedented. You know, the difference between me finishing school and kind of doing practice for 7 years, that change, even over the last few years, I mean, it's just, it's constant. I could spend all day, every day, just looking at new food companies, you know, or new food science. The change is hard to keep track of. And that's for me being a specialist. I can't imagine, like, for a client or, you know, a regular vet, it's a lot to keep up with.
So when you talk about, for example, healthy animals, right? So when owners come to you with healthy animals, what is their perspective? Why do they seek out your recommendations?
Yeah, sometimes, well, we're really lucky. I would say overall, our clientele is very interested in nutrition, very educated in nutrition. So sometimes they might just have questions that are kind of beyond the scope of general practice, and they just want to talk about nutrition at a high level of detail. Sometimes they have kind of their own experiences in human nutrition, and they want to see how that applies to their pet. And, you know, really taking nutrition, again, not just kind of food to survive, but food to thrive. So some of our owners are kind of at that level. That's why they seek us out. Other times they seek us out because their vet recommends it. You know, their pet just shouldn't eat any of the commercial options out there. They might need something really special, and they just want our guidance and advice.
But if you look at, let's say, homemade diets, right? So what is kind of your typical approach when owner comes to you and says, I want to have a homemade diet? And again, probably it's challenging. So maybe we should split this into healthy animals versus diseased animals, right? It's probably easier. So when a healthy animal comes and owner wants to do homemade diets, what is usually their motivation and how do you approach the recommendations?
Yeah. So for healthy pets, one conversation that I usually can skip is why. They usually come with me, you know, to me already with their reason why they want to feed, which is great. I think it's super helpful to hear where the client's starting, you know, what their priorities are, what kind of time they have, what type of budget they might have. All of that can really affect how I might approach a diet. Even things like the pet size, you know, cooking daily for a Great Dane is a completely different ballgame than a Chihuahua. So that's one kind of big difference, I would say, in approach if it's a healthy pet. Healthy pets are fun as well because I typically don't need to worry as much about picky behaviors. So preferences are usually a lot more open. The kind of variety that we can build in for a healthy pet as well tends to be greater than our ill patients. And we might have slightly different initial goals. I would say for all those, both ill and healthy pets, we usually approach it in phases. So, you know, phase one might be getting a grip on just what does this pet like, how are the logistics going, you know, getting the essential nutrients into them. And then phase two might be making life a little more complicated, adding in other recipes or varieties or kind of tailoring it to the pet's response.
So maybe, can you tell us maybe a little bit, what are the common motivations of pet owners to home cook for healthy animals?
Yeah, so sometimes, again, they're very just interested and intrigued by nutrition. I have professional chefs for clients sometimes that just love cooking and, you know, just want to do that for their pet as well. I have some clients that come to us because of a distrust or a concern with commercial diets. Sometimes it might be related to things like back orders or the inability to kind of get the diets that they want, recalls, and sometimes it's education. Sometimes after we discuss like how industry might approach a diet or, you know, what the priorities for this patient are and the reality of home cooking, sometimes people change their minds. So that can happen. And again, it is a big undertaking, and I want to make any of these diets sustainable for the owner and make sure we're all on the same page. So it is always good to cover like what your goals are and the biggest concerns.
So what are the challenges and logistics that a pet owner needs to be aware of if they decide to home cook?
Yeah, so a few things that can be surprising. You know, one is, when we approach a homemade diet for a pet, it's a little bit more like making baby formula, you know, than it is making like a dinner recipe for ourselves. And so the level of perfection I want in that recipe is high. Most of our pets with homemade diets probably eat way more balanced and well than most of us do. Because from my perspective, this pet might eat this every day forever, you know, so even just being a little bit off on a number or having things not exactly how I want them can add up over time. So that can be a little surprising for owners who might be used to more variety or more flexibility in a diet, just that level of precision. Another can be the micronutrients. So sometimes the macronutrients, the protein, the fat, the carbohydrates are a little more intuitive for us, you know, and a little more similar to our needs. But the micronutrients, the vitamins, the minerals, that can be a lot more difficult. And making sure we have our balance correct. Sometimes also getting the pets to eat that, that's kind of the least palatable part of the diet. So sometimes making sure they actually, you know, get those important nutrients can be a logistical challenge.
So do you have any, maybe just since you mentioned the micronutrients and palatability, is there any tricks you have that they make it more palatable, or is it just still part of the entire diet?
It depends. I always warn people it could be an issue because when you go to the trouble, you know, to get this recipe, to cook for your pet, it can really crush your soul to see them reject it, you know, and not like it. And it's typically, you know, no insult to the chef. It's typically related to the taste of those vitamins and minerals. So the biggest thing I would say is to go slow. You know, don't go 0 to 60 with introducing the supplements. We go really, really slow in the amounts. It might take 3 or 4 weeks or more to build up to the total supplement amount, but that's totally fine as long as we're making progress. And I should say I'm very picky about supplements. Again, we're kind of treating this like baby formula, and the supplement industry can be a little bit like the Wild West. So I have a short list of supplements that I like. And I try to, you know, really make those diets perfect when it comes to supplements. So I put a lot of thought into it by the time I get to a recipe. And so slowly building up to those kind of recommended amounts is really important.
I could imagine that some owners, when they come to you, again, we are talking about healthy animals now, right? And they have some expectations from their side first, right? Like cooked diets, mildly raw diets. How do you approach this discussion?
You mean coming in with preconceived kind of
Exactly, yeah. So they say, I want to do a raw food diet instead of a cooked diet and so on. Do you kind of try to discuss with them pros and cons, or how do you approach those expectations?
Yeah, you know, I would say, in my experience, nutrition is, you know, part science, it's part art, and it's part religion. So the science part, I can absolutely educate people about. The art part, I think, really comes from experience and anecdotal stories. The religion aspect, I leave up to the owner. And I have a lot of respect for our owner's, you know, choices at the end of the day, especially if we, you know, have gone through my important kind of points or what's important to me from my perspective, and they share what's important from their perspective. And most of the time we can find a happy medium. For example, I'm not a fan of raw feeding. I think the cons just outweigh the perceived pros. But if I have an owner who really wants to raw cook, that's important to them, I can absolutely talk to them about mitigating, you know, the risks and about still making it a complete and balanced diet. So again, I have a lot of respect for their choices at the end of the day.
So it's all about communication. And one other question that always comes up often now in nutrition discussions about rotation of diets, right? Should we feed our pets always the same? So I guess if you said that it's so important to be like a baby food formulation, right? How is it manageable to change suddenly ingredients? How does that, or do you recommend that they feed pretty much the same ingredients long term?
Yeah, you know, that's a really patient dependent type question. You know, one con of a homemade diet is that unless you have a laboratory like in your kitchen, there's always going to be a little more wiggle room. You know, the calculations that we do and the recipes we make are very precise, and owners most of the time follow the recipes pretty precisely. But at the end of the day, there still can be some room for, you know, unintended error. Like if their chicken is different than the chicken from the USDA that I have numbers for, we might have some variance there. So, you know, needing to accept that there's going to be some differences and kind of adding that in as a buffer with certain calculations, I think is important.
But do owners want to switch, for example, and say, I want to feed a little bit chicken for the next couple of weeks, and then I would like to provide my own with beef. So do you accommodate their wishes? I mean, I'm sure you can, but the question is, how do you kind of navigate those changing recipes if they truly want to change major ingredients?
I think it's really helpful. What I like to do is do that with the owner. Like I show them a scenario, like this is the diet that I've made, you know, and you're interested in swapping the chicken out for beef. Like this is what happens. Like this, these numbers look great. This part's no problem. But this number over here is an issue. And if it's a pretty healthy pet, a lot of times I can run some scenarios and build in options for them. Because again, I like to make these precisely, but I also live in reality. And I know sometimes you're going to go to the store and there won't be, you know, pork, you know, or something like that, or not the same fat percentage. And I like to give that flexibility to owners and the variety to pets if I can. So again, a lot of times I'll approach these in phases. So phase one, if it's a healthy pet, I might have a lot of options, you know, like this is how many vegetables I would like for this pet. Here are some choices. Try them out. In a month or two, come back to me and we'll run the numbers with whatever you're actually using. And if that proposes some changes, then we can make them at that time. The ones I worry more about are the patients that are, you know, really sick, you know, ones that might have really specific needs. And I try to communicate that to owners. Like I would love for, you know, maybe in 6 months, we can get to a point where we have two different protein sources, or, you know, we have some variety here and there. But first, let's just find one recipe, you know, that works well for your pet. And then we will, you know, make life a little more interesting.
So let's assume you have a pet owner who is cooking, home cooking for the healthy animals, right? What are the typical, you know, surprises on their side, or what do they come back after 2 or 3 weeks and report? What are their biggest challenges or surprises that they didn't expect in the beginning?
For healthy pets, some of them have come in already on a homemade recipe, which is helpful. You know, any data can be helpful. Most of the time, I'm really happy. Most of the time with a recheck. What I love to hear is the owner has gotten to a good pattern with the logistics. That we can circle back to that, but that can be where the surprises are. But I love to hear that the pet loves their food. You know, really enjoys it. Things are going well. We've slowly put the supplements in, you know, into it. Now, you know, what's next? Like, what else can we add? Circling back to the logistics, I think one surprising thing can be the variation in calories. And I think a lot of us know this for human nutrition that, I mean, you can have a skinny friend that eats twice as much as you do, you know, and weighs less. And you can have someone who's really unfortunate and might have a really slow metabolism. And we absolutely see that in pets as well. And so sometimes understanding that you're going to get this really precise recipe, but we have to see how your pet responds. You know, if they're losing weight and eating all of this, we probably need to change it. So the caloric intake and those changes that we make are not an exact science.
And what are your, from your experiences, the biggest mistakes that the owners often do while home cooking? Unintended or intended, let's say unintended, right? Maybe. So they don't, not aware, but what are really small tips that owners need to really follow exactly to make sure their home cooked diets?
Yeah, home cooked diets are, I tell people they're easy to get wrong and they're hard to get right. So, you know, if they've taken the trouble to, you know, seek out an opinion, that's step number one. You know, they've done plenty of studies to look at homemade recipes you might see online or, you know, sometimes even from vets, you know, and most of them, the vast majority of them are unbalanced and something important, you know, an essential nutrient is missing. And maybe that won't cause a problem immediately, but certainly over time. And so I think even a well-intended owner who might feel like they have a recipe from a reputable source, just understanding like how difficult they are to get right, I think is really important.
Other things like, for example, I mean, I'm I'm not a cook myself, so but I mean, I know that, for example, like, you know, properly long-term cooking rice, you know, potatoes and things like that. Do you have to tell owners doing that, or you rely on them to do it properly? Like, digestibility, right? If you don't cook some of those ingredients long enough, they may still remain undigestible. So what is your experiences there?
Yeah, the logistics of cooking, it varies a lot. You know, some of our clients come to us, and again, they're professional chefs. Sometimes they're 18 and they've never cooked on their own. So everyone has a bit of a different starting point. And so in all of our discharges, we try to cover the basics, like safe meat cooking temperatures, you know, how to cook potatoes and rice and things like that. But there are endless ways you can prepare this. And when we get to that level, it also depends on the owner. You know, how much time do they have? How do I make this sustainable for you? And sometimes there are some shortcuts I can offer them. For example, like frozen vegetables are often really high quality, and they're flash frozen and sometimes have higher nutrients than vegetables that might sit on trucks for weeks before they reach us. So that might be an easy way I can save them some time. But that's one thing I really like to talk about at Recheck. You know, how is this going for you in the kitchen?
And how often do you recheck them?
If they're starting a new homemade diet, I like to touch base in at least 1 to 2 months. I find that that period of time, you usually have feedback. You're kind of getting into the flow. You might have hit some roadblocks. And I really want to check and see how that supplement introduction is going.
We have only a few minutes left. Let me talk a little bit about the disease part of that's also probably a very, very challenging area. So how do you approach those comorbidities, for example? That's probably, I would assume that many veterinarians maybe transfer patients to you, to nutrition service, or what is the most common reason why a veterinarian would send a nutrition consult?
Yeah, so some common disease processes for homemade diets would be PLEs, so protein-losing enteropathies, and those patients often need an ultra-low-fat diet. Sometimes the protein source can be very important as well. Weight loss is a huge thing we need to address with a lot of those patients. Renal disease is a really common one as well. Typically, those patients are not eating well. There are a lot of renal commercial diets out there, but maybe the pet doesn't like them, or maybe the owner just wishes to cook. So that one's really common as well. And then, as you mentioned, you can have more than one thing going on, which can make it a little difficult. And for those patients, we just take a critical look at what their priorities are. You know, for example, if it is a pet that might have renal disease and pancreatitis, are they emaciated? We need to focus on, you know, weight loss and controlling that first, you know, or is it a patient that has really, really high phosphorus and creatinine and they're eating a really high protein diet, and maybe we can make them feel better if we focus on the macronutrients.
So maybe a final question is, for me, is one thing that we always, obviously, nutrition becomes so important, right? So that's when we look at information out there. What do you think, as a clinical nutritionist, what is, I think, a lot of misconceptions out there? Not misconception, but let's say things that could be easily addressed, maybe a lack of information, right? Either for the veterinarian, for the general practitioner, also specialist. What could be like two or three things that you often see that could be already have been addressed in an earlier stage before they come to you?
Yeah. It is hard when, and we can have quite a wait, and it is hard when you have a patient where you wish, I wish I could have talked to you for 10 minutes 2 months ago, you know, and maybe I could have positively impacted something at that time. You know, one thing I would say to referring vets is, if they ever think something shouldn't wait, like, always let us know. We're more than happy to give some type of advice to tide them over. Or if price is a concern, I know it could be expensive seeing specialists. You know, if there is anything we can offer via email, like, we're more than happy to talk to another vet. That's a standing offer. I will say Cornell has a great website for some starter diets for PLE. So there's always things we like to tailor to the patient. But if you have a weight and you haven't tried some of those things, I think they're a good resource. And then the Balance It website as well, which is run by a nutritionist, I think is a great option for healthy pets and some more common disorders. And that's something that owners can get on their own if they feel comfortable with that, kind of navigating at least a starter diet. So that might be something that gets them, you know, going before the appointment.
It's time for our famous three. Vetchem and NutraSurance is compelled to provide safe and delicious ingredients to improve our pets' food so they can have the best quality of life. Every day, they deliver specialized expertise, innovative products, and unrivaled support through the pet food and rendering value chain. From oxidation control and food safety to palatability and nutrition, all the way through a suite of tailored services that support you from start to finish, we ensure you're getting the most from Kemin ingredients. Kemin is compelled by curiosity to ensure pets around the world are living happy and healthy lives.
So that brings me kind of to some one or two final questions a little bit on the side of our topic, but you already mentioned Cornell website. Is there any other a book that you would recommend for people who really want to get a little bit into the nutrition themselves? Is there any books you could recommend?
We need a new book. there are some resources. So Mark Morris has, we call it the Big Blue Book of Nutrition, which is a lot. You know, if you ever can't sleep one night and you want to read through that, it's free. It's online. My owner can absolutely read through that. But some of the information is pretty dated. The basics, and there's some great kind of visuals in there. So it's something I still share certain graphs with owners as a visual, for example. And it's a great start, but it is a bit dated. So if anyone, any nutritionists have some extra time and want to rewrite a book, I think there's absolutely room for that.
Another web sources that would be useful?
Yeah, so Tufts has a great blog. I don't know if you've seen it, the Pet Foodology, where I think they have very client-friendly articles about common issues. And I think they're kind of restarting some newer issues this year with that. That's a great one. Wasava has a wonderful kind of nutrition toolkit. So, for example, a lot of pet owners and GPs sometimes are interested in kind of evaluating pet food brands, and they just don't even know how to approach that. They have a great one pager of going over different questions you can ask. There's always more to talk about, but I think it's a really good starting point.
Great. So that brings us to the end of our episode today. Thank you so much, Emily. And then it was great because I think nutrition is, especially the clinical side, is so important in really understanding all of the interactions between disease and nutrition. So this brings us to the end of our episodes. And this concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast presented to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable to us. And until next time, this is Jan Sugodolski from the Pet Food Science Podcast signing off. Goodbye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.